This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. A quick reminder before we get started, any advice provided by Brandon is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives, so consider whether it's appropriate for you. Brandon van der Kolk is authorized to provide general financial product advice in Australia and is authorized representative number 1305795 of Guideway Financial Services Proprietary Limited, AFSL number 420367. Please see the description box for Brandon's financial services guide. Past performance is not a reliable indication of future investment returns. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Young Investors Podcast. We are back once again, a day late and a dollar short. Isn't that the same? No, a day late because I've just gotten back from Sydney. Hamish, how are you going down there in Melbourne anyway?
Yeah, I'm doing great. We're on a bit of an even more of a bootlegged setup. Normally we're on a bit of a sketchy, huge lag setup, but the lag was so bad today that we're now on a phone call, but we still have the video like Skype up with the audio muted. So we've got video so we could see each other, but it's delayed by like 2 seconds.
It's so funny just watching you. I'm just like hearing you pretty much in real time and then just watching your blah, blah, blah afterwards.
Yeah.
It's so discombobulating. Anyway, yeah. We've checked over our last few podcasts and they've actually sounded pretty good.
Surprisingly. Yeah.
Surprisingly. We've been struggling so much with lag lately. So we have got a very bootlegged setup, but we are determined to still bring you this podcast. Lag will not defeat us. The distance will not defeat us.
Mm.
We are here and we will keep podcasting. Just keep podcasting. Even if it takes us an hour and 45 minutes to record a 50-minute podcast.
Yeah, geez. Let's try and not do that this week. Well, hopefully not, because we don't have any lag. So, assuming we don't have any other issues, touch wood, then
fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll be okay. Yeah. So we're doing the podcast a day later because you're in Sydney. What was going on in Sydney?
Yeah. It was really cool, actually. I got to go to a talk that had a couple of different presenters, but the keynote speaker was Sir Richard Branson, the guy that founded the Virgin Group. So that was really cool. Yeah, I went up with Tash and we went to this conference. Tash went to the TikTok Awards. That was kind of interesting.
It kind of
coincided with the Australian TikTok Awards. So she went over to that. And the next day we got up and we went to this talk and they had a few people. There's, what's her name? Brittany Saunders. She is the founder of Fate the Label. She's a YouTuber turned businesswoman,
right.
Founder of Fate the Clothing Label. And who else did we listen to? We listened to Ty Lopez. Lopez was there.
Really?
Yeah.
So he's still operating. He's still around.
He's still operating. Yeah. He's just a marketing guru.
Yeah.
For those that don't know Ty Lopez, if you've seen his YouTube content, it's very heavily kind of marketing focused. I mean, he's good at it. He's good at marketing. He sells a lot of coaching courses. That's for damn sure. Mm. He makes a lot of money doing that. But I don't know. It was interesting listening to Tai Lopez. Before yesterday, I kind of saw him as just this pure, like, money-grabbing, scammy kind of marketing dude. He was actually a pretty good speaker. Like,
yeah,
I actually didn't mind sitting down and listening to him for an hour talk about his career and how he does things and how he markets stuff. I mean, it was actually pretty interesting. But then finally we got to Sir Richard Branson. So he is in Australia currently because he just kind of relaunched Virgin Voyages, which is their cruise line business. He told a very interesting story. I didn't know this, but he launched Virgin Voyages the week that COVID broke out in the Western world.
Oh, really?
How brutal is that?
Yeah.
How brutal is that?
That's some timing.
I never really thought about it, but one of the questions was like, how have you been affected by COVID and how are you doing now? And I didn't really think about it, but Richard Branson is probably one of the people who was most affected business-wise because airlines, Virgin, obviously, Virgin Voyages just launched, immediately shut down, and also Virgin Active, the fitness clubs all over the world. So gyms, airlines, cruise ships, bang, bang, bang,
yeah,
nothing.
That's crazy.
So he was saying that he spent about, before the pandemic, it was about 90% of his time was spent on his non-profit ventures. And then as soon as the pandemic hit, he was like straight back into insane hours working with all his business partners to try and just like save or like do the best possible job they could to save the businesses, which was crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
It turned out that he told us that it was him that orchestrated the takeover of Virgin Australia by Bain Capital. Remember right. how we were yep. talking about Virgin going bankrupt? It was him. He actually he has good relations with the people at Bain Capital and called them and asked them if they'd consider stepping in to recapitalize and take over the business. And they agreed. So,
right.
Yeah, it was really good, actually. He's got a great story. I definitely admire him as an entrepreneur. He's definitely for profit. Like he runs a lot of for profit businesses. He goes about I like the way he goes about it. He's very adventurous, very open to ideas. Doesn't like settling for the status quo, that kind of thing. And one of the key takeaways as well. Sorry, I'm rambling a bit here. The key takeaways I found was he was asked like, "What do you attribute your business success to?" And he is a big believer in Warren Buffett's rule number one of investing, which is don't lose money. So it's kind of, he didn't say it in those exact words, but he said, look, as an entrepreneur, we're always pushing the limits. You know, the entrepreneur is the person that is pushing the boundaries and creating the new stuff of the world. But he said, very importantly in his career, he's always tried to minimize his risk of losses. And focusing on the downsides or the potential downsides is imperative if you want to be a successful entrepreneur. So he was talking a lot about that, which is interesting. Yeah. He noted that when he first started Virgin, he bought one Boeing plane. So it's not like he was putting in a big order with Boeing like some of the other. He bought one Boeing plane and he negotiated that if Virgin failed, he could just give Boeing back the plane after a year and get his money back. And somehow he negotiated that.
That's great. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot about protecting your downside, minimizing downside risk. So I took a lot out of that.
Yeah. And I think like a big thing that I noticed that's common with some of these people is avoiding risks where you can, if you're wrong, you get completely wiped out. Like where there's, a massive loss of capital, whether it's kind of a Buffett approach or avoiding taking on huge amounts of debt that could just wipe out the entire business. Like you can still take risk. You obviously need to take calculated risk, but avoiding and as you said, focusing on like the downside. So that's interesting to hear that, that was a kind of a feature in his success as well.
Mm. Yeah. Also seemed like a really genuine guy. You know how sometimes you listen to people speak and you're like, this is fake.
Yeah.
There was nothing fake about Richard Branson. He was very, and I like one of the things that personally irks me is when a business leader gives a talk and they just kind of come across like they're God's gift to humanity and that they only do good and they're not... Like for Richard, he was talking about, you know, his efforts in trying to solve the climate issue. And he by no means was saying, you know, he's a saint and this and that. He was like, yeah, Virgin, we're developing this fully renewable biofuel that he actually used in the plane that he flew to Australia with. So that was a big thing. You know, back in the day, he, you know, he convinced Boeing to make planes out of carbon fiber because Boeing said, no, it's not possible. And then he actually instructed his team to make a plane out of carbon fiber and fly it around the world and then landed at Boeing and say, you can do this, please do it. Wow. And so he's done all these cool things, but he doesn't like, he doesn't go down the path of being like, I am the best, you know, I am the biggest, best business leader and I only do good. Like he was very upfront and saying, look, we feel like we need to do this because if we look realistically at our businesses, like we contribute to a lot of this carbon stuff, like cruise ships, not great, you know, plane flights, not great. So we feel like he wasn't saying that, oh, we're leading the way in the charge to renewable. He was just like, look, we think we really ought to balance the books, especially with the businesses that we run. So it was good to hear him kind of speak in a very real way, not just like floating his boat for an hour, which is what you get with a lot of business leaders.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that sounds interesting. I've never really looked at his story or, you know, how he built his businesses at all. He's just been one of those that I'm obviously aware of who he is, but I haven't kind of looked into it. So I'll you've piqued my interest. I'll have to do some extra digging now.
Yeah. No, it was good. Overall, it was good. I'm glad I went. It was good to hear his perspective on things. But yeah, they're probably my takeaways. So there you go. You've saved yourself a couple hundred bucks in ticket costs, everyone. Well done.
That's brilliant.
All right, Hamish, what are we talking about? Oh my gosh, talk about a slow news week, Hamish.
No.
About a slow
news. Don't. We're not doing this again. We're hyping up every episode.
Hype.
There was so much news this week. It blew me away. I wanted to include so many stories that I chose not to include.
We had to cut this down.
We had to cut it down. It was a 3-hour podcast, actually. No, there's a few actually interesting stories. We had Google announced a new AI language model, which was very interesting. We got the RBA rate decision here in Australia. I saw an interesting story in The Age around billionaires in inheritance and how that's kind of shifting over time. We got a GTA 6 trailer. Ooh. Finally, after whatever it has been, 10 years or so. Have we got?
Yeah. And then I'm just talking about Helen Toner, one of the board members from OpenAI that stepped down, has just done an interview sharing her perspective on the situation. So I'll talk about that as well. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that said, today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings. And manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days. And you can also get a $50 off coupon if it's your first time signing up to a Seeking Alpha premium subscription. So seekingalpha.me/younginvestors. Go check out Seeking Alpha if you haven't already.
Sounds good. All right. Where do we start? Can we talk about Rockstar?
Yes.
That's really, you know, we got a comment on last week's episode specifically asking, what was your reaction to the GTA 6 trailer?
Really?
So we will cover that, but it is obviously a bit of a bigger story than just GTA 6 in that this is Rockstar. This is Take-Two Interactive. This is their next big game. And what's probably going to be the biggest game of all time, if not second biggest behind Minecraft. So this is actually quite a big deal in the industry of video gaming. So I thought I would take you through it. So yes, on Monday night, they announced the game along with its first trailer. We always knew the game was coming, but they officially announced it along with the first trailer for the game. If you don't know Rockstar, they are known for pretty much... How would you describe Rockstar, Hamish? What sort of games does Rockstar make?
Just really awesome, like open world exploration, long story mode kind of type games that are super high quality.
Super detailed.
Yeah, and they only bring out kind of a new iteration of the game every decade or even longer in some cases, whether it's their Red Dead Redemption series, the last game I think came out a few years ago, but then I can't actually remember when the one before that was. I think it was about a decade earlier. And the same thing is true for their GTA series. I think the last game was 2012 or 13.
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
So
2013. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they always come out and blow us away with And it's also kind of refreshing to have a studio that doesn't just make a new version of the game that's slightly better every single year just to sell another copy of the game.
Yeah, there are a lot of different models in the video game world. Of course, the one that kind of gets a bit tedious and frustrating is something like a Call of Duty or even some of the sports games where there's a new game every single year, but the improvements are only very minor, kind of like an iPhone update. The improvements are only very minor, and it kind of makes you, you know, when the new iPhone comes out, you're not really that wowed. It's not game changing. Whereas Rockstar in their video game world, they do the complete opposite, where it's a long time between drinks, but when that new game comes around, it's a massive leap forward. They focus on making each game as insanely high quality as possible, as good as they possibly can, so that they put all their eggs into this one basket. They sell it. It's amazing. Everybody buys it, as opposed to just trying to keep people on the hook year after year with a slight improvement. Anyway, that is what Rockstar do. That is, that is their strategy. So the new game, the trailer was what, 1.5-2 minutes long, and it looks as though gamers are going to be returning to Vice City, so the game's Florida setting. The quote here is, Grand Theft Auto 6 continues our efforts to push the limits of what's possible in highly immersive, story-driven, open-world experiences, said Sam Houser, founder of Rockstar Games. We're thrilled to be able to share this new vision with players everywhere. So the new game will come to Sony's PlayStation 5 and Microsoft Xbox Series X and Series S consoles, Take-Two said in a statement. But I don't know if you've already seen, people are getting a little bit annoyed that they didn't straight up announce that it will come out on PC. I think similarly to what happened with Red Dead Redemption 2, this will come, but it will come a little bit later. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I think they normally do that with their games, right? I think even GTA 5 came to the PC quite a bit later than their console releases, as far as I'm remembering. So I think that's, been pretty normal for them. But yeah, it is strange for them to do that, considering PC is probably a very large audience, especially for a game that you can really ratchet up the quality, and it does pay actually to have a really beefy like PC. Like, you can get a lot more out of a GTA game or a Red Dead with a PC that can be do a lot more than
mods,
a console.
Graphics packs, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, if you guys have played Grand Theft Auto 5 and you've played it on PC with some graphics textures, it's an insanely different game to what it looks like on I remember when I got it back on Xbox 360, Grand Theft Auto 5, and it's night and day. So it really can look like a modern game and play like a modern game, even though it was built back in 2013. Or released in 2013, I should say. So, yes, I think you're right. I think the PC will obviously come. It just won't be at launch. And why is this a big deal? I kind of hinted at it before, but I think this game's announcement is a big deal because it probably will be close to the best-selling game of all time. So I'll talk about their other games. So as of November 2023, Red Dead Redemption 2 has sold 57 million units worldwide. That was released in October 2018. So it cost them between $370 million and $540 million to make. And in 2018 alone, it made $1.38 billion. So that's the strategy of put all your eggs into the one basket, spend a lot on the game, and then bang, release it, and everyone buys it because they trust that it's going to be high quality, and they made $1.38 billion in 2018 alone. But the other game that we really need to compare to is Grand Theft Auto V. So that, as we were talking about, debuted in 2013. It's now the second best-selling video game in history, having sold more than 190 million copies. So this means the game has done over $7.7 billion in sales. So that's the kind of money we're talking about. And this yeah. game, I should say, cost them, I don't know how much it's cost them post-launch, but up until launch, it cost them $265 million USD to make Grand Theft Auto V.
It's just insane that a game, one single game, can make almost $10 billion. Like, that's just an enormous amount. And you could even argue that they probably could have made even more, considering in video games, most games, they're priced pretty standardly. But if you think about how much like time you get out of a GTA game, they could easily charge or probably should be charging more than a Call of Duty, where you get, you know, 4 hours of a campaign and then you play the same multiplayer again. It's kind of crazy that the standard is that every game is whatever it is, $90 or whatever the standard is now. So yeah, maybe even, as you said, maybe with GTA 6, they'll be able to, or they will charge a higher price, and then, you know, we can see how it really does.
That is my sneaking suspicion.
Yeah.
That is my sneaking suspicion. That will come in at a higher price point, but people will pay it because they have, like, that's the thing about Rockstar. People trust Rockstar, I should say. They really do trust him.
Yeah.
They put a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of review time, a lot of attention to detail into each game they make. So this one, I can imagine it costing them a hell of a lot more than $265 million. But yes, I think if they do this one right, this could very well be the biggest game of all time.
Yeah, and I think one of the...
I should actually say the biggest game of all time, as I was saying before, is Minecraft. And that sold over 300 million copies. So GTA 5 is at 190 million copies, Minecraft at 300 million. So it'll take some doing, but I think it has a chance.
Yeah. All I was going to say was, I think actually one of the developers of GTA 6 actually made a comment about how games should be priced more similarly to how much game time you get out of those games. Like games where you're getting 60 hours, 80 hours of content. It makes sense that they would cost more than a game where you spend a few hours playing a campaign and then you put it on the shelf and never play it again. So I think you're right. I think it's very likely we'll see different pricing for GTA 6.
Yep. And to answer your question, what was your reaction to the GTA 6 trailer? I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. I think
what was your reaction, Hamish?
Yeah, I think the thing I noticed the most was how populated the city was. So in the trailer, and maybe it's not going to be like that. I mean, we've certainly seen lots of trailers disappoint in the last couple of years.
Cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk, I think, is probably the shining example. There's some hilarious compilations of like the pre-rendered content that they put out before release and then what the game actually looked like.
What transpired.
Yeah, like a one pixel burger. like literally two pixels.
Two pixels of a person. You got a top pixel and a bottom pixel.
Yeah. But if it really is that populated, then especially as we kind of compared it to the GTA 5 trailer, how populated the city looks is night and day. It's like 10x, 20x more populated.
Yeah.
So that will be interesting to see if that's the case. Lots of new vehicles, lots of new animals like alligators. It looks like there's all kinds of new stuff. Obviously, they'll port in a lot of stuff from GTA 5, but it does look like they're adding quite a lot of new stuff.
Looks like they're porting in a lot of stuff from Red Dead Redemption 2 as well. If you look at kind of the swamp environments and that kind of stuff, that looked very Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
I'm excited, man. Coming out in 2025. Oh, still so long to wait.
I'm going to be...
It's all right. Take your time, Rockstar. It comes out when it comes out. Just release a polished game.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, I just... If Rockstar comes out with a game that is disappointing, like it's really like rusty, like a lot of games have been recently, then that's a really, really bad sign for the entire industry. Because there has been a lot of complaints over the last few years that costs have been just cut back dramatically, and a lot of games have been disappointing from even big studios that have been historically very, very good at putting out consistently good games. So I guess we'll see. I guess we'll find out in 2 years or in a year and a half.
Fingers crossed. Come on. Yeah. Anyway, that is that was us talking a lot about a video game that doesn't come out for 2 years.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah. I saw Take-Two's stock went up a lot when they announced that there would be a trailer.
A few
weeks ago. It was up like maybe 10 or 20%, which is kind of funny.
Wow.
It shows how much investors think that game will have an impact on the company's performance, at least over the next couple of years.
Uh-huh. Yep. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
All right, cool. Well, let's wrap up that discussion, Hamish. And what should we talk about next?
Yeah, let's talk about Google. So Google, of course, has been in the AI language model competition for some time. We've heard about Bard, although it's been pretty substantially weaker than their OpenAI rival, ChatGPT. However, Google recently announced this week their latest competition with OpenAI. They unveiled Gemini AI, which is a brand new language model. And we don't know too much about it, although they did post kind of a few demos online. And I think the most interesting thing about this particular model, of course, there's all kinds of benchmarks, and you know, they'll claim that they're beating ChatGPT in a bunch of benchmarks. But I think the most interesting thing to understand from a consumer perspective is the fact that it's multimodality. So essentially, the way Google described this is that OpenAI has different AI language models that they've trained on different inputs. So they've kind of got ChatGPT, which is text based. They've got DALL-E, which is images. And then they have like Whisper, which is audio. So they're all kind of separate language models. Whereas Google is claiming that Gemini is trained on all of the different inputs. So text, code, images, audio, and video, which basically means it's an anything-to-anything model. So you can use any of those inputs once it's kind of developed, once it's coming out.
Right.
Any of those inputs to get any of those other inputs on or any of those outputs. So for example, they showed a couple of demos. One of them was they showed like a live video feed into Gemini, and Gemini was able to explain what it was seeing in real time on text and in with audio. It was also able to explain what it was seeing in multiple languages at the same time. So it was just in real time being able to translate what it was seeing. The person was kind of drawing a duck freehand. And it was able to tell what a freehand drawing of a duck. At first, it thought it was a bird, and then he kind of added water, and it's like, oh, it's a bird in water. It's probably a duck.
Right. And then that's crazy.
The interesting thing was he then pulled out a rubber duck, and simply by squeezing the rubber duck and it making that noise, Gemini was able to work out that it's plastic and it's hollow and therefore would likely float, which I thought was kind of impressive, that it was able to infer that from just a simple video.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives you an idea
that
of,
is crazy.
Of how this, it gives you again, like a nice little window into how AI is going to come more and more into our lives, that you can just show it a video feed, and it can interpret that.
And then, you know, vice versa as well, that it could turn text into creating some kind of video or photo as well. They also, I thought this was a cool demo. They did kind of the three cups with the ball underneath one of the cups thing, where you put one of the ball under the cup and then you shuffle them around. It did that and it was able to follow where the ball was. They did some magic tricks and it actually, like a human, guessed the wrong hand, but then after was able to figure out, oh, you used a trick, use the sleight of hand trick, which I thought was interesting. Like they did like kind of the coin transfer between hands and it guessed the wrong hand. And then after it was like, oh, I guessed the wrong hand. You used the sleight of hand trick. And it was kind of creepy how like it sounded exactly like if you were doing that to a child, like if you did that trick to a child, it would pick the wrong hand and then realize, oh, you did something, like you did something.
You tricked me. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And there was a bunch of other demos that they did, just little demos on YouTube. So you can go, kind of check them out, if you're interested. They also announced it's going to be available in kind of three different versions, three different sizes. So they have Gemini Ultra, which is their most capable model, which will be for complex tasks. They have a pro version, which is kind of the most broad model for doing most tasks. And I think that over time will be integrated into Bard. So that'll be kind of the consumer version that we can kind of interface with. And then there's a nano version, which is a less effective but more efficient version that they'll be deploying on mobile devices. So,
there you go. That's hectic. Yeah, that's... I will be very keen to have a bit of a play around with this one because it sounds cool.
Yeah. And it gives us kind of a window into a future where you have kind of a very strong general AI where, you can combine text, audio inputs, maybe even a video input if it's required for the context and get answers rather than just being stuck in kind of one lane. Like you can get it to write an essay and then you can also ask the same AI to develop a picture that works well for the article or whatever. Like it's more kind of a one-stop shop, like a one piece of technology that you can interface with for all of your work.
I guess it makes sense for Google to do it this way as well because they're kind of just turning Google or Google search into AI, because you think about like what can you Google search? You've got web search, you've got image search, you've got video search, you've got all these different search functionalities. And I guess I would imagine their thinking is, can we, obviously AI is now going to be the next or text-based, these language models are going to be the next iteration of that searching function. So can we just consolidate everything, all the different types of search that we offer into one general solution that's powered by a strong AI model?
Yeah.
It makes sense to me why they're doing it.
Yeah, yeah. That's basically kind of all of the information we got. There's a bunch of, if you want to nerd out, you can go and look at all of the different tests and benchmarks that they do. And they think that it's much more capable than ChatGPT, but maybe they would have some response and say we would do the benchmarking a different way or something like that. Regardless, it's supposed to be very, very competitive.
Was this a YouTube presentation? Like where did you find all this?
There's information on the Gemini website, but yeah, they did a I just found clips on the Google YouTube page. I'm not sure if there was like a full presentation, but they've at least uploaded kind of a bunch of 1-2 minute clips with different demos. On the Google YouTube channel.
Let's have a look. See, Jim, I just thought that there's not really one that's popping up. A four and a half minute video from Google. Yeah, that's probably it.
That's probably the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Wowee, Hamish. It's certainly, it's crazy to think, when was ChatGPT released? ChatGPT release date.
Like end of last year.
End of last, the 30th of November 2020. It's been like a year, dude. It's been a year.
Yeah. Give us a decade of this and it's
it's going to be kind of crazy. How much
that's,
it's influencing
that's insane.
Us. Yeah.
That is insane. Yeah, true. Aye, aye, aye. Certainly the trend. All right. Is that all we had to talk about with Gemini AI?
Yep. That's all it.
Right, cool.
That's it.
You want to talk about Helen Toner?
Yeah. So, give us the inside scoop. What's
going on? So she was one of the members of OpenAI's board that got, well, that stepped down eventually. She voted to get rid of Sam Altman, and then we know what happened after that. Sam Altman, all the employees threatened to quit, and Sam Altman was reinstated, and the board stepped down. So she has recently done an interview with the Wall Street Journal. Excuse me. And she's finally given kind of her side of the story. Helen Toner is a 31-year-old academic from... She's Australian. Did you know that, Hamish?
I did not.
She's an Aussie. There you go. Also known for being a former board member of OpenAI. Yes, that's what we are talking about. Toner maintains that safety wasn't the reason the board wanted to fire Altman. Rather, it was a lack of trust. On that basis, she said, dismissing him was consistent with the OpenAI board's duty to ensure AI systems are built responsibly. Okay. Quote, our goal in firing Sam was to strengthen OpenAI and make it more able to achieve its mission, she said in an interview with the Wall Street Journal. How does that sit with you? Does that what's your initial reaction to that? Does that sound like BS, or does that sound like she's got a leg to stand on?
I don't know, honestly, but it doesn't sound like she wrote it. sounds like something the PR, your PR manager writes.
The PR department has definitely gone over that one a few times. Mm. But yeah, I mean, it was in an interview with Wall Street Journal, so it's coming out of her own mouth.
Yeah.
Toner held on to that belief when amid a revolt by employees over Altman's firing, a lawyer for OpenAI said she could be in violation of her fiduciary duties if the board's decision to fire him led the company to fall apart, Toner said. He was trying to claim that it would be illegal for us to not resign immediately because if the company fell apart, we would be in breach of our fiduciary duties, she told the journal. Quote, but OpenAI is a very unusual organization and the nonprofit mission to ensure AGI benefits all of humanity comes first, she said, referring to artificial general intelligence. I don't know. I'm no lawyer, but... I don't know. Could she really make that argument that if you don't step down, you are doing something illegal?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't know.
I don't know where she found that lawyer, but she should probably...
No, that was the OpenAI lawyer against her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't...
Yeah, saying you better step down or you might be doing something illegal.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, though. I don't know where that lawyer got that from, though. Last time I checked, making a business decision is... not a breach of fiduciary duties, yeah. but I don't know. Who knows?
Certainly seems like a little bit of blackmail to get her to step down with the rest of the board. But yeah, interesting that she didn't really go into much detail on this whole ousting of Sam Altman stepping down. It's kind of weird. She didn't have any kind of major things to point to. It says here in the article, in the interview, Toner declined to provide specific details on why she and the three others voted to fire Altman from OpenAI. Before his ousting, however, Altman and Toner had clashed. Right. So there was one kind of argy-bargy. So it says, in October, Toner, who is a director of strategy at a think tank in Washington, D.C., co-wrote a paper on AI safety. The paper said OpenAI's launch of ChatGPT sparked a, quote, sense of urgency inside major tech companies, end quote, that led them to fast-track AI products to keep up. It also said Anthropic, an OpenAI competitor, avoided, quote, stoking the flames of AI hype, end quote, by waiting to release its chatbot. After publication, Altman confronted Toner, saying she had harmed OpenAI by criticizing the company so publicly. Then he went behind her back, people familiar with the situation said, so I don't know how much you can trust that. Altman approached other board members, trying to convince each to fire Toner. Later, some board members swapped notes on their individual discussions with Altman. The group concluded that in one discussion with a board member, Altman left a misleading perception that another member thought that Toner should leave, the people said. So there might have been a little bit of Sam Altman not liking Helen Toner, trying to convince the other board members to actually get rid of her. That's a bit up in the air. Again, I don't know how much you can believe this, but it seems like that there was a bit of a clash.
Yeah.
And Sam Altman might have told some porcupines just to try and convince the other people that Helen Toner needs to go. And then when Helen Toner had a chat with the other board members and figured out that this was being kind of constructed by Sam Altman, maybe that's then led them to say, you're not trustworthy, Sam. Yeah. We need to vote you out.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think, you know, we'll never really know.
We're never going to know the actual truth.
And this kind of like boardroom politics stuff probably happens all the time. You'll never, it's a lot of, you know, he said, she said, stuff that'll never be proven, kind of is how it is sometimes. I don't know. But it is interesting to hear her kind of perspective on it. There has been kind of a lot of speculation, I think, conspiracy, I guess, that it was around the safety of OpenAI and whether it had, you know, achieved some kind of general intelligence or something like that. This story
it's coming for us.
Yeah, I mean, this story makes more sense. Certainly sounds more grounded in reality than some of the speculation.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything more to add on that. It's just kind of continuing the story. By this point, several of OpenAI's then directors had already had concerns about Altman's honesty. People familiar with their thinking said his efforts to unseat Toner, parts of which were previously reported by The New Yorker, added to what those people said was a series of actions that slowly chipped away at their trust in Altman and led to his unexpected firing on the Friday before Thanksgiving. In the interview, Toner didn't answer questions about her interactions with Altman. She wouldn't comment on whether she would have done anything differently, but said that she had good intentions. Quote, I think looking forward is the best path from here, Toner said. So it sounds like she's trying to put it all behind her and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. Get a nice positive piece with the Wall Street Journal before you try and get hired somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. State your case so that people can hire you again and move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, there we go. Hamish Hodder. There we go. More drama in the Sam Altman realm.
There you go. Well, it's a good. At least it isn't general AI, so it's a good thing.
We're not being taken over.
No, it's not. You know, they haven't elected Sambot as CEO, which is good. which is good news. I found a story from The Age around billionaires and their inheritance, and I thought it was kind of interesting. It's a story that's kind of been developing throughout this year, but there's something specific that happened this week, but. Billionaires are now inheriting more than they're creating. So for the first time in history of the UBS annual study of billionaires, so UBS does this kind of annual study, a new billionaires accumulated more wealth through inheritance than entrepreneurship.
Interesting.
In most years, entrepreneurship generates more billionaires than just, you know, money being passed on to their heirs. But the way they kind of measure this is, in 2023, I believe it was 2023, $151 billion US dollars was inherited by 53 heirs in the year to April 6th, versus $141 billion US dollars in fortunes of 84 new self-made billionaires. So they're kind of taking all of the people who are kind of considered self-made billionaires, and then taking all of their wealth and kind of attributing that to entrepreneurship, which is probably not a good way to do that. But that's kind of the best way we can look at it. And for the first time in history of their studies, more was inherited than was self-made.
That's crazy.
Yeah. They also
kind of... What do you think this... Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, sorry. Continue. I was just going to say, what are your... I don't really know how inheritance works in the United States.
Hmm.
But I guess this definitely sparks the debate of whether there needs to be some sort of like death tax. Because this it's so hard because I can understand if you're a parent and you want to devote your life's work to creating a future for your child, I get that. I can respect that. But when does it become... I feel like that needs to be allowed but to a certain point, after which maybe the rest of it kind of gets put back into the economy somehow as opposed to kind of just sitting on the side. I don't really know. I haven't looked into this in depth, so I'm cautious to put forward a washed opinion. But I don't know. How do you kind of view the subject?
Just on the death, like the inheritance tax, there is actually an estate tax in the US. I don't think
I'm
not actually sure about Australia as well. I'd have to check. But yeah, that is kind of obviously it's a big point of discussion, especially because if you look back in like US history, for example, there are examples of families building enormous wealth over generations and then eventually having to have their assets essentially split up. So like the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers, like so in the if you look kind of go back last 200 years in the US, there's kind of been these periods of time where families have accrued so much wealth that they kind of just end up owning everything. So it does tend to happen. Yeah. But then the other side of it is like it's not as if kind of money transferring from a billionaire to their children is it's not like that money's just like under a mattress. Like it's like transferring ownership of maybe a business, like the Walton family transferring the ownership of Walmart. The money is still in the economy. It's still invested.
That's true.
But what is interesting is if there is a shift in intentions of how generations will spend that money, and that's kind of what the UBS study went into. There's kind of been this dramatic shift, or at least from the people that they surveyed, which is not many people, but from the people that they surveyed, the difference in objectives for how to spend that money is pretty different. So first of all, they kind of noted more than 1,000 aging billionaire entrepreneurs are expected to pass on $5.2 trillion to their heirs in the next 2 to 3 decades. So, you know, that's a lot of money that'll be being passed down from one generation to the next. So the shift in wealth could have a big impact on how money is invested and spent, depending on kind of what people's objectives are. And that's kind of what they looked into.
The values of the next generation, I guess.
Exactly. And I should note, this study is of only 79 people. There's obviously only a small subset of billionaires to choose from, but their survey is even smaller. So that's just something to, you know, take this with a giant pinch of salt. It's a pretty small survey or study. But what they found was first generation billionaires, of those first generation billionaires, the ones that currently have the wealth and that are going to be passing it on, 68% of them cited philanthropic goals or making an impact on the world and society as their main objective. So about 70% said that was kind of their main objective with their money, whereas only 33% of their heirs had the same objective. So far less, which could, you know, indicate a shift in how, you know, money is invested and spent. And then the other one was just 16% of heirs are prioritizing enabling or supporting others compared to 48% of first generation billionaires. And, you know, part of that probably lies in you know, the heirs being younger, obviously, than people older. The other big difference is, of course, people who have kind of made their way up are far more likely to want to help others than someone who just inherits an enormous amount of money. That tends to be a big shift. And again, it's just a small, it's only 80 people that they saw, 79 people that they surveyed. So who knows if this has any relevance, but it is interesting to see that, okay, we are going to see this big transfer of wealth And if there is a big difference in goals and objectives and the way they see the people see the world, we could see money move or invested capital move out of certain places and into.
It's interesting that those statistics, I guess, like this is something that Charlie Munger used to say, and I'm paraphrasing. He would say he got asked a couple of times what he thinks of this massive, these big families that accrue heaps of wealth. And he kind of said his answer was that he doesn't really think too much on it because, history suggests that after a few generations, the big families kind of lose all their money anyway. It gets passed down and then it gets spent or gets blown in some spectacular fashion. And then that kind of family's generational wealth is no more.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of interesting. And I guess maybe those responses give you an indication that trend is playing out. Like it seems like the people inheriting the money do think a little bit more selfishly or not even self, but they think less about others, whereas the other people are, all for, supporting the environment, supporting the society and whatnot. So I don't know, maybe it is. I think Charlie Munger says usually within three generations, most family wealth has been just completely destroyed.
Yeah, so, yeah. I think that
interesting.
That tends to be the case. There are obviously outliers,
but
that does kind of tend to be the case. And it kind of makes sense as well, because if you don't have wealth and you're trying to build a business, the way you think about taking risk is very different from if you're just given $1 billion and you can just you can just drop $100 million on a business idea that is probably not worth,
probably garbage. Anything.
Exactly. And it's, the way that you think about risk and money is completely different.
Totally different.
So it kind of makes sense that effect does happen where, lots of money is just kind of wasted and then other families can build wealth and that sort of thing.
Very interesting, Hamish. Is there anything else to this study?
No,
an interesting one.
That's pretty much it. This is kind of like an additional story. It's like a new kind of study around the great wealth transfer story that a lot of people have covered on YouTube and Wall Street Journal did a massive piece on it as well. So if you're interested in reading more about this, there's tons of stuff about this big multi-trillion dollar transfer that's happening.
Yeah, nice. Very good. All right. You want to take us quickly through the RBA's decision, the central bank here in Australia? What do they do? Do they raise interest rates?
Oh, yeah. I'll give you a really, really in-depth response.
Okay.
They kept it at 4.35%. That's it.
Interesting.
Done.
Gosh, tell me more. No, tell me more.
Oh, they just thought, 4.3, the four at the front, great number. And then, decimal point, that makes sense. And then a three, pretty similar to four. And then five, three, four, five. So, And then slap a percentage sign on the back of that. There you go.
They went around the room. Pick a number between 1 and 10. 4.
How many fingers am I holding up?
Yeah. There we go. All right. Do we want to talk about that at all or no?
No. There's nothing to say there. I mean, it's all the same lines.
Same. All right. Well, let's not spend any time on it then, Hamish. Let's move on to some Q&A questions in that case. And as I always say, if you'd like to ask a question for Q&A, just leave us a comment on the most recent episode of the Young Investors podcast over on YouTube, or you can drop a comment in the Spotify question box, which is natively on Spotify. We've actually been getting a few more Spotify questions of late. Normally it's just YouTube comments, but we've been getting a few on the Spotify comments as well.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Where should we start, Hamish?
Let's start here. Love the show, lads. Well, thank you. For both of you, what was the first stock you bought and how much?
First stock that we bought? Well, the first stock that I bought was quite a while ago now. It would have been the Australian Foundation Investment Company, which is not an ETF. It is a listed investment company. Right. So technically it's actively managed. Although it is fairly broad market index like. So I had no idea what I was doing back then. I still don't. I spoke to my uncle, and my uncle kind of said, look, a lot of Australians, you get a nice dividend payout, it's like 4%. A lot of Australians build their wealth, they reinvest their dividends, they snowball their money through this foundation investment company, this listed investment company. You know, it's really nice, it's good, whatever. And I was like, all right, sure. And I just, I invested in it. And to its credit, I still hold those shares actually this day. I never touched them. Yeah, and I am up on paper, because it is kind of just index-ish. It's not actually pure passive. It is actively managed, but it's still index-ish. So yeah, as the market has performed over the last decade, so have those shares, and here I am. How about you? What was your first stock?
My first one was NAB. National Australia Bank. I think I bought, I don't actually know the amount, to be honest. I think it was probably like $800 or $1,000 or something like that.
I think I only invested like $1,000 maybe in my first one.
Yeah.
Not a lot of money.
This was before I'd gotten into value investing or anything like that. This was just the first time. I was like, let me just put some money in the market. And I remember my thought process was just simply that the banks were pretty solid and that it was unlikely to go away or anything like that. It was unlikely to do terribly poorly, I thought at least. And it also paid a nice...
Pretty good thinking for a young guy.
Yeah, and it paid a good dividend. I think it paid like a 6 or a 7% dividend yield or something like that. So I was like, all right, that'll do. I quickly worked out that every time the dividend was paid, the stock would just drop the exact amount of the dividend. So... I made like no money. Like the stock, I'd get the dividend and then the stock would just go down a little bit, and it just kind of stayed like that pretty consistently. I think I do still hold it as well, but I'm not sure. I'd have to check. I think I still have it. No real deep thinking into that. But I remember I want to say a month or maybe 2 months after that, I started to dollar cost average into an ETF, like an Australian ASX ETF.
Right.
It didn't take too long for me to look into, okay, like if my reasoning for buying NAB was it's solid and stable, there's a much better way to kind of get that out of an investment, which is to diversify into the entire Australian market rather than just one individual bank. That's ultimately, that's really my first like decent investment, I guess, was the index fund.
Yeah, nice. Oh, you got on the right track very early, which is good.
yeah. Fortunately. Yeah.
It took me a little while longer.
Yeah. I don't think, I had a couple of I had a couple of just individual picks that were just like horrendous choices when I look back on them. Like I invested in Vocus Group. Yeah. I invested in Vocus Group, which was kind of like telecommunications company I know nothing about. Like Ramsey Healthcare. Like I was all over the place at the start. But at least I somehow figured out or I learned from the right people that, you know, I should be consistently adding to this index fund. And that's, you know, if I want to play around on the side, that's fine, but let me do this solid thing. And then, you know, then I got into value investing, and that took a major part of my portfolio as well over time.
Mm. Yeah. Nice. All right. Question. How do you deal with the heartbreak of finding a company that is simply amazing, and then you see the price, which is astronomical?
Yeah. Man,
I hate that. That's so common too. It's so common.
Yeah, I think
you just find this killer business and then it's just so expensive. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that's the reality most of the time. I was literally just looking at a Charlie Munger clip and he was talking about this, how, you know, most good businesses, most of the time they're 25, 35 times earnings, which means you can buy them at that price. And if they perform really, really well, if they meet expectations, if they exceed expectations, you'll do well. The problem is if they underperform expectations, you'll lose a lot of money. So there's that element of risk, even though it's a safe company, right? That's the whole value investing thing is even though it's a safe business, there can be this risk if you pay too much for the business. But yeah, that's the reality of value investing. Most of the companies you like and that you've analyzed and that you think are good businesses will not be cheap for, you know, nine years and 11 months out of a decade. that's just the reality of good businesses. And then, you know, some businesses will never be cheap and some will have 6 months, 12 months, 1 month where they have some kind of problem where there's a bit of uncertainty around the future of the business. And that's where you'll be able to buy them. But it's about kind of, my approach has been to build kind of a watch list of all kinds of good companies and just have a ton of patience. Rather than kind of analyzing a company and then seeing its price is high and then being like, oh, well, maybe I can justify paying this. Just add it to the watch list and, you know, maybe sometime in the future it'll get cheap. I kind of viewed Netflix that way in a lot of ways. I liked the business for a long time, but it was unprofitable. It had so much debt. It was extremely expensive. So it was a nice business. Like I liked what they were doing. But it just had all these elements that just didn't work. So I just kind of shelved it, put it on the side, and five years into my investing journey, it became I thought it was appropriate, right?
Ding, so, ding, ding.
Yeah, it's like that's like a long time. It's like a half a decade. So sometimes it's like that. That's just the nature of value investing.
Yep. I think you just got to enjoy the process. You just got to enjoy the process. You got to stay patient. You got to enjoy the process of looking into these businesses.
Yes.
And you're right. It's not the be all and end all if eventually you do your valuation and you go, oh, you know what? This is quite expensive. Because if you've gone through the process, then exactly what you're saying, Hamish, it goes onto your watch list. So it's there. It's in the warm bucket. We're not there yet, but we could act quickly if we needed to. Exactly what you said, Hamish. Just build out your watch list, stick with it, and eventually, not always, but sometimes, if you have a decent watch list, sometimes eventually something crazy will happen and you will get that opportunity.
Yeah.
And it feels good knowing that you've done the digging. It's on your watch list. You know what price you'd be willing to pay, and then when it does happen, you don't have to stress. You can bang, got it. You know, I've bought, you know, there's no umming and ahhing. Oh, I better go quickly read the last annual report on this and that. And oh, is the management still, nothing. It's just like, it's ready to go. Bang. Take action.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There was, it's actually kind of funny. Cause like there was a stock that I'd researched a year before COVID hit. And, I'm so glad I did that research because the stock was only within the price I was willing to pay for, I think like 4 days or something. Like it was a ridiculously short time right at the bottom of March was, I pretty much bought it on the bottom, like, which was, you know, lucky in hindsight, but, if I hadn't done the research, I would have been starting it then. And I absolutely would have missed that opportunity. So sometimes it's kind of like that.
I think I know the stock you're referencing.
Yeah. I didn't want to throw too many names.
Nah, it's fair. Do you still hold that stock, by the way?
Yeah, I do.
Or
yeah.
Not anymore?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, it's been quite good.
Yeah. Well, it was like your best performer for a long time. What is it still?
Yeah, I think it's probably done like 60% a year or something like that. So, yeah.
Wow. Wowie, Hamish. Wowie. Yeah.
That was a good one.
Impressive. It was a good one. All right. I remember you and Tom doing a lot of talking back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. About that one. Anyway. Well, guys, that will just about do us for today's episode. Thanks very much for sending in those questions. Definitely keep the questions coming. As I said before, leave us a comment, even just like topics you want us to discuss. Doesn't even have to be specific questions. If you just want us to cover a topic in the podcast, feel free to let us know. Any major news stories or news stories that you've seen which you feel like would be good for us to cover, definitely just let us know and we'll just chuck it in and talk through it. But apart from that, thanks as always everyone for watching, and we will see you guys next week.
See you guys.